Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton, and this is the Saving with Steve Show. I want to thank you for joining us today. More importantly, I want to thank you for sharing with your friends, your family, your associates. We have well over 600,000 listeners, and we're growing. So thank you so much. Today, we have a wonderful show for you. The big question here is this: we have the Delta variant and all that stuff coming back. So how are you going to survive and thrive in this post-pandemic economy? We have Tony Zork, author of Econoclasm, a survival guide in the post-pandemic economy, to help us thrive. So you're going to want to stick for that. I'm today going to be talking about the simple retirement hacks for late starters. So if you're getting late started for retirement, you're 45, 50, 55, hey, no problems. There's things you can do to make sure you get yourself on track and make sure you have that retirement of your dreams. Now, the first segment, socioeconomist and author Dr. Randall Bellis has consulted on more disasters than anyone in history and is widely considered the world's top authority in the field of post-traumatic thriving. Stick with us to learn how to tap into energy from a trauma and use it to do something remarkable that you wouldn't have done otherwise. The reason why I'm having Dr. Bell on the show is because we see what's happened in Mississippi, Louisiana. We have the wildfires. Those are big traumas, and you're going to need to learn to survive. It is about money, because if you survive, you can thrive. And you know what? It'll be about the ins and outs of money. So again, I want to thank you for joining us. I'd like to introduce Dr. Bell to learn how to tap into energy from a trauma and use it to do something remarkable that you wouldn't otherwise do. Now, Dr. Bell, welcome to the show. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Steve, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm glad you're here, but I want to kind of give the everybody who's listening a little background on you, okay? Besides being an economist and a sociologist, Dr. Bell's research has taken him to more than 50 states, 7 continents. He studied cases like, he's been on cases included the World Trade Center, Flight 93 clash, BP oil spill, Hurricane Katrina, the nuclear testing at Bikini Atoll, the tragedies of JonBenet Ramsey, O.J. Simpson's, as well as the Heaven's Gate mansion mass suicide there in San Diego. The media often calls Dr. Bell the master of disaster. This experience has given him an unprecedented access and insight to the cycle of disaster, recovery, and prosperity. You know, he's somebody who knows his ability to analyze complex situations, present his findings, and interest in organizing in an intelligent way. So you have the background on Dr. Bell. You say, wow, he's been through a lot. One of the things that I'd like to start with is, you know what, when somebody experiences a tragedy, you know what, we have people that got COVID, people passed away from COVID. You know what, I had a brother that passed away from cancer last March. And you see shootings, rioting, and it's almost like, you know what, it's a disaster. They hit that war zone experience. And what's the cycle that people go through when they experience something like that?
Well, Steve, first, I'm sorry to hear about your brother. And so my heart goes out to you on that. And the basic cycle is that you go through a phase of prosperity. And there we tell ourselves a big lie. It's lie number one is that it can't happen to me. And then there's the disaster. And then we get, you know, kind of humbled and beat down. And then the second great lie is there's no hope. And people that really, you know, get into the recovery and the post-traumatic thriving are those who reject both those lies, that realize it can happen to me and that there is hope, and they more dial into that kind of mindset in that cycle.
So how does somebody get from, you know what, you don't, there's a process I'm going to assume that people have to take to not buy into the lie. It's almost like that of, like an alcoholic has, where they don't think they have a problem, but yet they do, and they don't realize it. So what are the steps that somebody has to take in order to understand, hey, you know what, that is a lie, this can happen to me? And then, you know, how does that healing take place?
Yeah, well, the book Post-Traumatic Thriving is in that cycle. It's in three sections, the dive, survive, and thrive. Dive is when you get hit. And, you know, there I talk about the mechanics of trauma and what it does to our brain chemistry, and understanding that in and of itself is very helpful. The survive stage is where we get back on our feet, and the thrive stage is where we blast off. Not everybody does that. Some people get stuck in the dive stage. I don't say that to be judgmental. It's just a reality. But it's the chapter one's on shock. When a trauma hits, there's that shock of, are you kidding me? I mean, when I was 11 years old, I was told I needed open heart surgery. I still to this day remember the shock of that experience. And there's the bargaining. I bargained with the doctors. I bargained with my parents. I bargained with God. Nobody wanted to listen to me. I needed the surgery. And then there's the denial and you know, all of that. Ultimately, you land on the depression stage, and that's okay. All those stages are normal, and you know, the anger is normal. As long as you don't get stuck there, and as long as you don't hurt anybody, including yourself, all those stages of the dive stage are completely healthy, normal, but we don't want to get stuck there.
Okay. Okay. So in other words, it's a process somebody has to go through. How long, I'm assuming it's almost like grieving for somebody. How long does that process usually take for somebody to get through it?
Yeah. When you're hit with a big trauma, typically it's 2, 3, 4 months. If you still are down in the dumps and depressed, it's time to seek some help. You trauma recovery is not a solo act. You've got to accept help. You can't bury it inside. One of the classic mistakes we make is we just bury it inside. Outside we look fine, but inside there's an internal war, and it's not pretty.
Okay. So it's almost like, you know, for example, my brother's wife and his kids, they're going through group counseling, and they're saying, okay, other people are like me, they're getting through this, and now I can share they can relate to other people and share and realize, hey, we're in this together. Is that kind of what we're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's what I call the dynamic duo of healing, and they're already doing number one, which I'm really happy to hear. And that's to sit in the fire. You know, group counseling, individual counseling, a good friend, you've got to tell your story. You can't bury it inside, even journaling, but get it out and discuss it. That's where you get healing. The people that get into some really, horrible aftermath of trauma are those that, again, buried inside. So they're doing exactly the right thing.
Okay. So, and the next step is, you know what, surviving. They hit the dive. Now it's the survive side. What's that process like?
Well, the first part of it is to kind of confront it, you know, really kind of say, hey, I got to deal with this. This is messing up my life. I'm messing up other people's lives. And then there's a chapter on sorting it out, where you kind of untangle things and you take what good you can out and separate the good from the bad, and just kind of differentiate between guilt and shame. There's a whole thing about that. And then the fun part of survival is you start exploring, you know, and it's kind of self-care. And it's kind of fun. You say, hey, maybe I ought to take up this hobby, or maybe I should rekindle this friendship. You know, there's no one way to recover from trauma. There's lots of ways. And we kind of go from self-medication and drugs or alcohol, or, you know, even prescription drugs, to self-care, you know, massages, golf, whatever's kind of, you know, kind of helping us kind of reboot our brain. And then that gravitates toward acceptance. And then we kind of ultimately in the survival stage, we land on an awareness. We just have a bigger, broader understanding of what we've been through, and we're kind of more mindful of our interpersonal strengths at the point.
Okay, so you know what? Some people know this, some people don't. About 15 years ago, I went through that about a colon cancer, where, as my surgeon put it, after I survived, he says, you know what, in about 4 hours, you either would have went through renal failure because I had a tumor that clogged up the colon, or the cancer was growing so fast, you would have went from a stage 2 to a stage 4, and we pretty much would have made you comfortable until you passed. And, you know, waking up from that and then, you know, coming home from the hospital, it was one of those things, like you said, I started reaching out to people, curtailed my whole schedule because I definitely worked too much at the time. And all of a sudden, little things didn't make a difference anymore. And, you know, people that I had spent time working when I should have been connecting with them, I started doing that. And I think that's one of the things that was the best thing for me, because some people were, it was interesting because when I went through it, some people didn't want to talk to me because they didn't know what to say or were embarrassed that they didn't try and talk to me to see how things were going. Is that something that people need to learn how to deal with or just understand and accept? Or
yeah, absolutely. There is this kind of awkward, you know, what do you say to someone? You know, in my own family, there's somebody in my family who's been told by the doctor she has 2 years to live. So, you know, I'm going out of my way because I've been through enough of this, of these disasters and so forth. I'm going out of my way to talk to her. And I'm going out of my way to, you know, hang out with her and have those uncomfortable conversations. But while they're awkward and while they're, you know, sometimes even ugly, that's where we get healing. When we buried inside, there's a lot of regret. Boy, I should have done this. I should have done that. But we don't want to do that. We kind of have to just kind of, you know, sit up straight and sit in the fire and have these conversations. It's the best way to go.
I was just going to say, one of my best friends growing up, I mean, geez, his mom used to blow my nose. That's how long we've known each other. He did not contact me at all and knew that I had gone through, you know, colon cancer and all that. And it wasn't until I think it was 7-8 years later when he found out he had testicular cancer. He called me. I think he spent like 25 minutes just apologizing and saying he was sorry and crying and all that kind of stuff. And for me, it was just like, hey, it's okay. I made it. I'm good. Yeah. For him, it was tough, but, he's actually alive now. So I'm really thankful for that. But now, you know, when somebody gets to the thriving side of things, mm-hmm. You know, what's that like? What are people thinking? Hey, I've survived this, and now they're looking at thriving.
Yeah. Well, with the thriving, let me interject a kind of a story to bring the principles alive. Okay. I lived two streets away from Leo Fender, who invented the electric guitar. In fact, I happened to be in a hotel room in Nashville where I'm a guitar collector, and I've been out buying some rare guitars. And Leo had trauma. When he was 8 years old, he had his eye out with a picket fence, so he had a glass eye, and then later he had his hearing blown up with an amplifier. So he was deaf and half blind. And yet he built a billion-dollar organization. And I, because my dad worked there, the Fender family lived two streets away, I really got the inside story of post-traumatic thriving from him, despite his disabilities. And one thing was, like we talked about, you know, talking about, he only told his wife, but he told somebody about what was going on. And secondly, it's deep breathing exercises. That's the second part of the dynamic duo. That is very healing. And I see that over and over again. Leo's particular practice was he'd turn on a really hot bath and soak in it for an hour before work. And you can call it meditation. You can call it yoga. You can call it Lamaze. You can call it grounding. It doesn't really matter what you call it. But the studies out of Harvard, there's at least 22 studies out of Harvard Medical School that show that deep breathing exercises resets the brain, because when you're traumatized, you go from the human brain to the inner instinctual reptilian brain. That's where all the trauma gets recycled. I'm trying to go through a whole lot of, you know, biology here quickly, but mm-hmm. but the deep breathing exercises literally resets the brain. Very simple. That's what Leo Fender did, and that's a big part of getting into the thriving stage.
Oh, that's wonderful. Hey, Dr. Bell, stick with us. We're going to be, you know, everybody, please stick with us with more of Dr. Bell. We're going to be right back. We just got to pay some bills with some commercials.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. I truly want to thank you for tuning in, and I appreciate you letting your friends and family members know about our show. All the replays are available at www.savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check us out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. You can always follow us at Facebook at the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page. You can get insider information, replays, behind-the-scenes information. All you need to do is go to the website at savingwithsteve.us. You know what? Again, this is the Saving with Steve show. I'm talking to Dr. Randall Bell, the master of disaster. And we've been talking about deep breathing, resetting the brain. Could you kind of give us an idea how that deep breathing works? Because you know what? I think a lot of people with COVID, crime, politics, all sorts of things, they're getting traumatized one way, shape, or form. And just to be able to have a simple technique that enable them to relax, centered, and figure out how they want to show up that day could make a big difference.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. Right now, Steve, our brains are what our scientists call the parasympathetic nervous system. In other words, we're in a calm state. We're alive, we're alert. There's no trauma going on that we're aware of. And that's where we are. When trauma hits, and by the way, by college age, trauma will hit 66 to 85% of everyone, you know, walking the planet. And by now with COVID, maybe 100%. But when that trauma hits, our brains, our parasympathetic nervous system turns off and our sympathetic nervous system turns on. That's where we get stress. And what's going on is the brain at the base of our brain is sending a signal right above our kidneys to release adrenaline. And we get that fight, flight, freeze mode where it's kind of like the cop pulls up behind you in the rearview mirror. And all of a sudden you kind of, you know, internally you're going, uh-oh, I'm really anxious here, or something even worse than that. And it hits us all. So what happens is when the trauma, you know, goes off, whatever it is, that the whole memory of the event is stored in that inner reptilian brain we were talking about. And so when the doctors come, the ambulance comes, whatever happens, there's things that we're back safe. What happens is we get re-triggered, just like you hear the Vietnam vet when the back car backfires, they hit the deck, you know, because they think they associate it with gunfire. That's a nature's way of protecting us. The way we get out of that fight, flight, freeze mode, which is unhealthy when there's no real danger. It's healthy when there's real danger because it gets us to safety. But when there's no danger, we don't want to be caught in that cycle. So to get back to your question, the deep breathing, it can be as few as 6 deep breaths. But ideally, it's like 15 minutes and you can get an app on your phone for meditation or however you want to do it. But it literally resets the brain chemistry. In the Harvard studies I referenced, they actually measured the brain growth with brain scans. So while it sounds remarkably simple, maybe too simple, the fact is it just really, really works. And that's how it works.
So basically, all you're really doing is you're breathing in for what, 10 or as much as you possibly can in a slow, long breath outward. Is that pretty much the size of it? Or
you can do that. In the book, I have 3 or 4. There's no right way as long as you're doing it. In the book, I have 3 or 4 different suggestions. But you can just close your eyes. You can, you know, deeply breathe in and out. You can. Some people use what's called mantra breathing. They'll say in their minds, they'll say the word so on the inhale and hum on the exhale. You know, some people don't like that. Some people do. There's lots of ways to do it. The bottom line, we just need to do it.
That's awesome. Hey, you know what? If you're just joining us, this is the Saving with Steve show. We're talking with Dr. Randall Bell about his book, Post-Traumatic Thriving, The Art, Science, and Stories of Resilience. You want to go to Amazon. It's a 5-star book. It's a wonderful book. Now, you know what? Could you share some stories other than Mr. Fender about some everyday people that might be dealing with COVID or issues that they had when they're little? And you know what? I think a lot of people don't realize when we say, you know, 65 to 80% of people have experienced trauma, that trauma could be falling off a wall, breaking your leg, that could be being yelled at, verbally abused and not realize it when you're little. It could be witnessing a crime, witnessing somebody pass away. You know what we see, I see like people react. And it might be something that somebody had, I want to say, chastised them for a number of years when they were younger. And when somebody starts in that same motion, they're already in that mindset. Is that kind of what's going on?
Yeah, see, that was a great list. I call it the difficult D's. Death, disease, divorce, you know, destruction, disaster. But you had a nice list there.
Okay, perfect. And the reason why I'm asking this is I've actually already bought your book. One of the things, when my brother passed away, I have a young niece who went out there to help, and she wasn't planning to stay, but he took a turn for worse. And she was there in the hospice care at the hospital when he passed away and has been having some issues with it. So I bought the book, sent it to her because I would love to for her to, you know, get through that because she's, you know, not many people have had that experience. So she doesn't have a lot of people to go to. So I wanted to get the book for her. So now when we take the steps of thriving, obviously we want to recenter the brain. What's the next step?
Well, we want to reconnect with people. We want to accept support and you know, learn new ways to connect with people. We've got to have there's a chapter on forgiveness. One of the other great lies we're told in life is to forgive and forget. You know, you're not going to forget your brother passing away. I'm not going to forget my heart surgery. We all have traumas, and forgiveness is more, you know, just coming to peace with it, allowing the memory of that come to go through our minds without being re-triggered and have the adrenaline set off and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a chapter on resilience where we reframe, we set new goals and kind of tap into our newfound spirit. That's where we kind of say, hey, you know what? This trauma really kind of slapped me across the face. It woke me up. And I, you know, in the book, I have somebody that was living a life of luxury. Her house and her husband's house was smashed by a landslide. And now they got the big ranch that they've always dreamed about. And her husband has a bunch of buildings where he outfits Western movies, which was always his grand dream.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. So the trauma doesn't always have to, you know, be negative. It can wake us up to do something we've always intended or wanted to do. And ultimately, well, you know, where we want to land is a sense of gratitude. For me, you know, having the open heart surgery was tough when I was 11, but as an adult, as a tall, white, straight guy from Orange County, California, I didn't grow up, you know, with a lot of empathy. I just, you know, was oblivious to a lot of struggles people had. Now, when I see a kid in a wheelchair, or I see someone in marginalized society, I have a whole new level of empathy for that person. And I'm willing to admit it. I get a tear in my eye when I see a kid in a wheelchair because that was me. So I'm grateful for that. I'm not grateful I went through heart surgery. It was, you know, it was a tough deal, but I am grateful that it made me kind of grow up and wake up that there's a bigger world out there than just a bunch of, you know, people from Orange County. So that's kind of how it plays out.
I actually agree with that because thinking of my situation, you're right. Going through 6 months worth of chemotherapy and recovering from a surgery for a month was not fun. And you know, chemo's not good when they have a drug called 5-FU. So, but you know what, I will say this because I was the guy that would leave 30 minutes before my son's birthday and then drive home and always be late. Afterwards, I didn't work past five, didn't work the weekends. I've been to every single one of my kids' games. I've been involved with every one of their events. And you know what? I am just unbelievably grateful. I'm on the upside of the upside of the grass, so to speak. So I agree with that. I think that's wonderful. I like the forgiveness part. You know what? I find that I'm just going to say because I so identify with this. You know, being a person who was always told, you know, hey, you're not tall enough, not strong enough, and that was the feel behind me excelling, and I was still. I had resentment towards some of those coaches, some of those people. And the odd thing is they propelled me to success, but I was still resentful. But after cancer, I said, hey, it's just not worth it. Why should I worry about that? I got too little hair as it is, and you know, I don't need to lose any more. So I'm just joking there, but I thought that was wonderful. So, you know what, we have about, 30 seconds. Could you tell everybody, you know, the different ways if they would like to get a hold of you for help? You know what? Go to your website, all that kind of good stuff. And I'd like to do another promo on your book.
Well, thank you, Steve. Yeah, I'm at drbell.com. I'm easy to find. You just Google my name, Randall Bell, and I'll pop right up. But I love the discussion. The book's everywhere. It's on Amazon, all the bookstores. But I love this conversation. I invite everyone to check it out and get back to me. Send me an email because I love the conversation. And if there's something I'm missing in the book, let me know. It'll go in the next edition. But the conversation, trauma, and particularly childhood trauma, is the number one problem facing mankind, or humanity. And if we can make the conversation bigger, we can heal from the trauma, we can make the world better. And if we don't do that, at least we'll make our life better. So thank you, Steve.
You know what? I appreciate that. I know there's a lot of people out there on the streets that are homeless. And a lot of times it's from the fact that they couldn't just deal with their traumas and they didn't learn how to survive and thrive. So I think this book is wonderful. I hope we can share it with more people. Again, Dr. Randall Bell has got a wonderful book called Post-Traumatic Thriving, The Art of Science, Stories of Resilience. It's a 5-star rating. It's in bookstores everywhere. You can get it at Amazon right now. Again, I want to thank you for joining us today, Doctor. And I hope you have a happy, healthy weekend. And maybe we'll have you back soon.
You do the same, Steve. Thanks so much. I've enjoyed every second.
I appreciate it. You have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, everybody, that was Dr. Randall Bell. I want to thank him for being part of our show. Next up, we have a wonderful wonderful guest by the name of Pat White, CEO of Bitwave, going to fill us in on everything cryptocurrency.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, I want to welcome you back. This is Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve show. We just had Dr. Randall Bell talk about his book, Post-Traumatic Thriving, The Art of Science, Stories of Resilience. It's on Amazon, 5-star, wonderful interview. You want to go back and listen to that again, read that if you've ever been through any type of trauma. It's interesting to find out 65 to 85% of people have been impacted by at least one trauma experience, and might even 100% when it comes to COVID. Hey, learn how to survive and thrive by checking out this book or going to drbell.com. Now, right now, I want to talk a little bit about retirement hacks for late survivors, late starters. Now, again, that's retirement hacks for late starters. So if you've been grinding through life and you now decide it's time, hey, I need to start saving for my retirement, okay? Reality is retirement planning can be stressful, especially if you feel behind. 2020, a report showed that the economic well-being of U.S. households conducted by the Federal Reserve showed that only 44% of Americans aged 45 to 59 felt their retirement savings were on track, leaving more than 50% of people feeling left behind. Starting or saving for retirement when you're 50 or older isn't impossible. It just requires hard work. If you're behind, you're not alone. There are resources available so you can start retirement planning now. The key is to develop a mental discipline to save and make the most of retirement accounts using catch-up contributions, all of which you can learn how in the next few minutes. Now, we're going to go through a number of steps so you can listen to this over and over again if you missed it. First of all, you want to determine how much cash you're going to need and when you're going to retire. Okay. The key is to step up and start savings. This is going to be hard work. You started late. Find a good advisor who can help you understand the three most important questions. How much capital do I need? How much money do I need to save? How much do I need to save regularly? And how do I invest with the highest opportunity for success? Because quite frankly, if you save the money and put it in a CD that's earning 0.6, it'll take you 2,064 years to double it. That's a long time, okay? Next thing might even be the first thing. Hire a financial advisor. When getting your retirement portfolio on track, financial advisors can guide you. They can show you options for formulating a plan to get you where you want to go. So if you're an advisor, can help you consider the options regarding pensions. If you're in the state, Social Security, those benefits you receive from your government, they can model the future benefits that can, you know, reasonably provide and what you should expect. They can also help you understand what clients' taxes will look like in retirement, remodel realistic spending goals, understand what healthcare costs could potentially be. And if you're in the United States, understanding what Medicare coverage and so on. Next thing is big. The key here is to create a budget and stick to it. Well, how do we create a budget? First of all, we want to list everything that we're spending. Break things down. If you're eating out, to coffee out, food out, drive through fast food. If you're buying food at the store, how much is prepackaged? How much is not? You want to list the cable bill, the cell phone bill, every single expense. If you have big lump sums like property taxes or insurances that you pay once a year, break it into a monthly bill, okay? Look at everything from those apps. Start cutting things out of that budget that you're not spending, okay? Not spending. Look for ways that you can do the same stuff, but spend less. So if you have one of those cell phone plans and you're in the top four companies, look at one of the sub companies. You might find they're on the same network. You can get the same service, but instead of paying $54, you can pay $25 like we did. For a family of four, that's $100 extra. Now you think $100 extra isn't a lot, but it's a lot when it comes down to paying down your debts, saving more for retirement. Look at your cable bills. Consider going through AT&T Live or Hulu Live or someplace like that, where instead of spending $300 a month, you can spend, say, $90, $100 a month on the internet, another $50 or $60 on Hulu Live, and buy a couple apps and save yourself another $100 a month. Look at refinancing your mortgage to bring more cash into the house. Eliminate some of the expenses that you have so you can free up money. Then you want to look at reducing your debt and paying it off as much as possible. According to Experian, average Americans have $92,727 in debt in 2020. The interest in association with debt, you know what, pulls money from your pocketbook, making it harder for you to save for retirement. The key here is this: you're better off earning an interest than paying an interest. So how do we go about paying down that debt? You want to list all your debts, lowest balance to the highest balance, the payment date, the minimum payment, the interest rate. I believe in a snowball effect. Some people believe you should start with the highest debt. I believe you should start with the lowest debt because I want to make it easy to create momentum. So what I do is I pay the minimum on every single debt. And on the smallest one, I put as much as I possibly can. If I've saved an extra $200 or $300 on my budget, I'm going to add $200 or $300 plus the minimum payment to that first one. When it gets paid back, paid off, I'm going to take out what I was paying on that first one and add it to the second one and third one. And that's how I create momentum. Pretty soon, you'll have it all paid off. And one of the other things you might want to consider if you're 50 is look at downsizing, okay? When you look at downsizing, it might be a good idea to look at how much you're spending. So you can end up selling that house that you don't have all the kids anymore, end up paying cash for the next house, and you've eliminated a mortgage, okay? You might even consider staying on the job longer. Hey, you know what? You're 62. You're getting so much at Social Security or from your government or your pension. But you know what? If you stay 5 years longer, you can get 25, 30% more. And that might be what you need in order to get yourself to the point where you can retire. The next thing, if you're in your 50s, you have the ability to maximize your retirement accounts. You can take advantage of the catch-ups. So if right now, if you're over 50, you can almost contribute $27,000 a year. If it's you and your husband, find a way to do that. A couple of things that are cool about it is you'll pay less taxes on the, you won't be paying any taxes on the money you contribute, and it compounds for you. You could save a lot of money. Also consider annuities. Why? Because they can create a guaranteed income that you won't outlive. Discover lost money by utilizing side hustles. There's many people who have started renting out a room. Like if you have that big house because you got three kids away at college, hey, consider renting out the rooms. Kids might not like it when they come back. You know what? But you can make an extra $200-$400 a month or have a side hustle. I know a lot of people who are touring individuals with English in other countries. And you know what? They're making $20, $30 an hour to do that. Now, the other thing is you want to decide when you're going to claim things like Social Security or your pension, okay? Why? Because the longer you wait, the more you're going to get, but you got to make sure it's going to be there when you walk out on life. Now, there are some great hacks there for you to start saving for retirement if you haven't started yet. Remember, you're going to have to become a disciplined saver. You're going to have to cut things out of your budget. You're going to have a financial advisor help you with realistic goals. Now, you know what? You want to stick with this? We've got Pat White in just a moment. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the show. This is Steve Sexton with Saving with Steve. And again, we're talking about the ins and outs of money. Hey, wasn't that wonderful? We had Dr. Randall Bell. He was talking to us about how to survive that trauma and thrive. Hey, I talked to you about if you're a late starter when it comes to retirement, what you can do and how to get on track. And now here we go. We've got Tony Zork. Tony Zork is an iconoclast, founder and CEO of Accounting Seed, technology entrepreneur, Forbes book author, CPA for the last 20 years. He embodies iconoclasm, the idea of changing the prescribed way of doing things and coming up with a better, more innovative solution. You're going to love this. Tony wrote this wonderful book called Iconoclasm, a survival guide in the post-pandemic economy. This is a book you're going to get. I believe it's a 5-star book on Amazon currently. I saw it today. I actually ordered it because I wanted to have it. It really is a guideline for helping people deal with what they're about to deal moving forward. Tony, could you tell us what inspired you to write the book?
Yeah, Steve, thanks. And look, first off, having me on the show, appreciate it. So I've been a successful entrepreneur. Forbes Books approached me, asked me if I wanted to write a book about our business because it would really fit kind of more of what they considered a disruptive technology. And I'm like, sure, yeah, I've always wanted to write a book, right? And then I was like, okay, great. What is this book about, right? And so, you know, in the process of writing the book, I really my inkling to write the book was, you know, dissatisfaction or kind of frustration and with a lot of things. And out came this book that I really realized that, you know, what I was really about writing this book. And I did write the book too, which is a lot of business owners don't write the book. I, you know, as being a first time author, I was going to try to write it with a ghostwriter, and that was a disaster. I actually wrote the book. I wrote it in about 8 weeks.
Oh, wow.
But what inspired the book and what I realized I've been doing for a long time was applying this formula, which I call an iconoclast formula, which is this challenge, design, execute formula. So an iconoclast is someone who challenges the existing way of doing things. They design a better way, and they have the actual discipline to execute that plan. And I think I've been doing this since I was a teenager, and I think it's a very proven methodology. And the reason I wrote the book, Steve, is because in the pandemic, it really became apparent to me that, you know, there's a cost to putting messages out on the internet and TV and television and radio, all these different sources. And all the cost to recoup that cost, it's typically companies wanting to sell you a product. It's typically nonprofits wanting to you just to donate to their cause. It's typically politicians wanting you to vote a certain way. So all of the messaging out there is to get you to convince you to do something that's best for those organizations. And there's basically no commercial value or no messaging out there for you to think for yourself, because nobody really benefits but you when you start thinking for yourself. And that's why I wrote the book, because I feel like there's just not enough content on this, or not enough influences and not enough people, you know, doing that. And I think the pandemic also revealed this.
Well, I totally agree. If you really think about it, there's so many people who are following others' thought, and it just doesn't work for them. And you can bring it back to the basic. Everybody's got that neighbor, that uncle, that guy at the bar who always tells you how to invest or how to do this or that. But you know what? They're the same guy that doesn't have any money or lost all their money, or you know, their house is falling down, even though they're telling you how to fix yours. You know, we all know somebody like that. And that's just that blind, let me follow this because it sounds good, without really thinking it through for yourself.
Exactly. And now with the internet, we can camp out. You know, we tend to subscribe to sources of authority and news that we agree with. We agree with that point of view. And then we can just sit in that camp the whole time, and then just let that leader or that authority source just take us down, you know, and think for us. It really delegate our thinking to that person, and just follow what they say. Whereas, you know, this is, I feel like everything that, you know, doesn't work well in our society and doesn't work well for a person, right? Is you need to be thinking for yourself. And rather than, you know, what I think happened with the pandemic is most people camped out in those familiar sources. They've insulated themselves from outside media. So they're not looking at alternative points of view. They're not really dissecting the arguments from those different points of view, and then making a decision for themselves based on those other inputs. You know, I feel like that's just not what happened here. You know,
no, I agree with that, because if you listen to a lot of people, well, they're, you know, how to put it, you see these people that come out and interview, hey, tell me why this, and all they do is regurgitate what somebody else said. And then they ask them another question and they can't respond. And it's just because you go, okay, you're not thinking for yourself and you don't really know the reason why you're supporting this. And it just doesn't make sense. If you really get down to it, and it would make more sense if you actually thought through it and said, here's why it's important to me, or this is why I'm doing this. So,
well, yeah, exactly. And then just, you know, I think too, in line with, you know, a lot of the things you talk about, there's a risk reward relationship to everything we do in life, certainly financially. And that seemed to just go out the window with this thing. You know, I write about it a lot in my book, in terms of, you know, I compare this pandemic to a natural disaster, much like a tornado or a hurricane. You know, when I was growing up, I grew up in Chicago in the Midwest, and we had tornado drills all the time. And the tornado drill, you know, when it was sounded, you went into the hallway, you knelt down, you put your hands over your head, and the teachers came by and critiqued your technique, saying you were doing that well or not. So we were very well prepared. And then with, you know, when this thing happened, you know, we were clearly unprepared. Like, that's, I don't think that's even controversial to say that. So I believe as a nation, we had a panic attack. And so instead of making our own decision, we looked at other countries, what they were doing, followed suit there. And then, you know, without having kind of an adequate evaluation structure of this, you know, if we rated this pandemic on a 1 to 5, there was people that were clearly thinking this was a 1 or a 2, and people thinking this was a 5. And if they go out, they're going to infect someone and they're going to kill somebody. And there was not any kind of consensus or like informed way for people to make an educated decision on that, because, you know, there's no official scale like that. So they took, you know, whatever sources they had. And that's why people, I think, reacted to this so differently. Whereas we would all agree you wouldn't walk out in a Category 5 hurricane, right? You would get blown away. Or it's also not a reason to move for a Category 1 storm. You would hunker down and get through it.
Yeah. No. Okay. So, you know what, Tony, I want to start talking about, you know what, the pandemic, hey, created a lot of challenges for people, okay, but also a lot of opportunities. What are some of the biggest opportunities, in your opinion, that's coming out of this pandemic?
Well, I think from a personal level, I don't think we're going to go back at all to for knowledge workers. I don't think we're going to be life's never going to be the same. Like, we've been working at home for this long. There's going to be huge opportunities to have just enhanced lifestyle from this. We're also going to scale our infrastructure, I think. You know, we figure out how to do that too. Do things that make sense, like, not, you know, cut down on pollution and use of things, right? And so there's huge opportunities there, as well as just the overall change and a lot of this is things that were socially, you know, not acceptable prior to this, are now, right? Like, the way we're using technology, specifically in the business world, we found that, you know, virtual technology like we're on now is actually pretty good. It's good enough for the business world. While it's horrible for personal relationships and we can't stand it, it actually works great for business. So opportunities like my company, we've pivoted to being a virtual company. We've hired people all over the U.S. since this started going, and we have no plans to return to the office like we did. The office, you know, really has 3 use cases. It's onboarding new employees, it's team projects, and meeting with outsiders. And the rest is going to be a huge personal choice for employees, how often they want to come in, and based on, you know, trust. And so trust in employees proven to work well remotely are going to have fantastic options. And companies who are thinking like, you know what, we're going to ratchet down and return to where we were before, they are going to have severe turnover problems, because other companies will allow good workers to have this flexibility now. So,
you know, I agree with you. Actually, I've done that for my business. Once this started, I had multiple locations and the leases came up. We don't have those multiple locations. All of our support and technical staff are actually in other places. And I'm trying to decide, you know what, like you said, it's for clients who want to come into the office.
Yeah.
I've spent most of my days on the phone, and I'm going to bet you have a nice shirt, but might be wearing shorts right now because we're on Zoom.
Exactly. I got my sneakers on and you know, right here, I got my running shoes. So definitely saved on leg wear as well.
Okay. No, that's wonderful. I actually agree with that. I think people need to understand that the way business is going to be done, the way we're going to be interacting, not on a personal level, but on a business level, has changed forever. You know what, Tony, stick with us. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back. We've been talking with Tony Zork, the Econoclast. We've been discussing what's happening in this post-pandemic economy. One of the revelations that Tony said is things have pretty much changed forever. People are going to have more people working in different areas, maybe not in the same town you're in, but in other locations. And that creates a different environment. You know, one of the questions I asked was, you know, what are the biggest opportunities in your opinion? What other opportunities do companies have? Do people have?
I think some of the biggest opportunities are, of course, around virtual expansion of, you know, the workforce, knowledge workers. Now we're hiring it rather than looking where our company is based in Columbia, Maryland, where we would circulate jobs just in the area. Now we can look nationwide and find just the best fit. And also from a worker standpoint too, I can go to work if I'm on, you know, I can really go to work for a company who I really am passionate about their product, their mission, and really believe in what they do. And I can go to work for them as easy as I can, you know, the company local here. So there's just, it's hopefully going to have a much better matching of skills and desires and focus and purpose than we ever had in the past. So I think, and that's going to result in better service for companies, you know, than ever. I think, you know, there's a huge opportunity in savings in things like commercial real estate. Obviously, we're going to be, you know, going from there. But even just, I would say in general, Steve, technology use in any creative way is going to be enormous. I had a guy, so I got an electric car, for example, uh-huh. And I had I hired an electrician to come and, you know, put in a level 2 charger in my house. And he called me. I missed his call. I called him back. We're trying to schedule a time for him to come over. And he's like, hey, I noticed you're on an iPhone. Can we just FaceTime and I'll walk around and I'll just give you an estimate off of that? I'm like, yeah, let's do this. So we, boom, launched him up, FaceTime. He's like, okay, walk downstairs. Okay, show me the fuse box. Okay, walk around this wall. Show me what's behind that wall. Okay, and then walk upstairs in the garage, and this is where you want it. He's like, okay, great. 10 minutes later, I had a quote, and we were done. I'm like, okay, why were we not doing this? How long has FaceTime been around? 10 years? And why have we not done this in the past? This is wonderful. But these, it's just whatever. It's the habit, right? And that's what my book's about. It's about, my book is more about the thought patterns and breaking these habits. That was based on a paradigm that if I'm a service worker and I don't come out to the field, I'm gonna lose this business, right? Where I think all these paradigms have been shot down by the pandemic. And the biggest opportunity is the rethinking here that you can now introduce and streamline and optimize with technology virtually any process and pass on a savings to the customer. So that's just, you know, in a lot of this technology has been around for a while. And it's just, you know, for whatever, we get into habits and we don't break those habits and we don't think to challenge them. And that's what the book kind of walks through. How to challenge paradigms and have a systemic approach to this. And that's why I think it's powerful.
Oh, I think it's wonderful you making that point, because companies moving forward, employees need to know this as well, because they might have to retrain themselves a little bit to function and perform in this new environment that is going to be created with the companies. Now, when it comes to some of those companies are, you know, considering going back to physical offices, you know what, you've already talked to us about what you envision for the remote work, but what advice would you have for them?
I would say I think where all this is going, Steve, is that you'll have choices of to come, you know, in physically to an office. Most people, this is my third time around working from home. And it's just like wonderful for 18 months. It's just like, you're like, this is the best thing. I'm wearing my pajamas. But then you get lonely and sick of it, right? So What I think is going to happen is that people will come to offices, you know, on some kind of standard interval. It'll be monthly for some employees, quarterly. Depends how far away and what kind of effort we're talking here, right? Maybe regional employees, it'll be a weekly or monthly type of thing. But I think the bigger change here, Steve, is that you won't be, if you're a full-time work-at-home person, you start to develop a different way of success and define a different way of success. So you're looking for fulfillment in your evenings and even like part of the, maybe during the day or in the morning where you're scheduling time and having interaction with other folks. Like I have a church group I attend. I have a fitness class I go to. I have friends down here that I'm connected socially on the internet around whatever, you know, whatever topic, basketball, cards, whatever. And I think this is where people are going to find fulfillment in relationships that they can control that are really outside of the workplace. And they're not going to really look for companies to fulfill that need. They're going to look at companies who are flexible that allow them to fulfill those needs and have provide a good relationship of trust where they can, you know, have that flexibility. But, and, you know, again, they're tied into the mission and the purpose and all those things. So I just think it's going to be a very different world. And what people are going to be looking for from employers is really different than it was in the past.
Now, you know what, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the book talks about the importance of taking financial risk and being okay with failure. Can you elaborate more on that?
Yeah. I mean, so as an entrepreneur, Steve, I think in what like really came out with the pandemic was that for so many people, you know, there was just the complete absence of a risk reward thought pattern applied to the pandemic and just a complete lockdown and fear. Right. So a risk reward is something as an entrepreneur you learn financially because you're forced to. But the concept applies to all kinds of non-financial things like this pandemic and going out and going on your way or, you know, it just even trying to go deeper on a relationship or whatnot. So It's a powerful concept that should be considered in branching out and undergoing any risk. And it's something that we're not teaching folks, you know, at all. And it's something that's kind of hard to learn. If you're an entrepreneur or a business owner, it's easy because you deal with this every day. But you know, if you're in a business as an employee, it's something and you're not used to applying that concept. It's something that can be really scary. And something you're out of touch with or out of practice with or haven't done in a long term. But risk reward comes in, you know, everything from, you know, going to college and, you know, what classes you choose or what path you take on the highway to get somewhere. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, applications of it that people should always be considering. And the book, you know, so in the Khanna Class formula, the challenge, design, execute formula, that executes the biggest thing. And that's where risk reward, the rubber meets the road, right? Because I call it, it's time for the showdown. Like in the old West movies, when they come down with the guns, right? Like lots of people can challenge the existing way of doing things. And a lot of people can even think of like, I know a great way to do that. That's way better. But then it comes down to actually doing it, right? And then when you actually come say, I'm going to go do this, then you start revisiting that design plan multiple times because it gets scary to go do these. But doing it defines the Khanna Class from other things like even an entrepreneur or even a philanthropist or an inventor or a thought leader, all these different things. That's different. It's these three things that make the challenge, design, execute. The execute makes the iconoclast, and risk reward has to be taken into account in that execute step with pretty much anything that you're doing.
That's wonderful. Hey, Tony, I want to thank you for joining the show today. The information you provided is valuable for everybody who's listening, especially people who are running a business or just trying to be in a business in this post-pandemic environment. It teaches people, hey, you really need to think because if you do, you can make a lot more money. And like, you know, our show is all about the ins and outs of money. So I want to thank you for being part of this. How can people get your book?
Yeah, if you go to tonyzork.com or you can search iconoclastbook.com, it'll take you right there. And the book's available on my site. And You know, it's easy to buy right on Amazon or Books a Million or Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, it already has a 5-star rating on Amazon. It's wonderful. Hey, look, thanks again. Be safe, be healthy, and look to have you back soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve.
All righty. Bye-bye. That was Tony Zork, Conoclasm is the book. You can get it on Amazon. You can go to his website. You know what? It was brought to you by Scoremaster.com. Did you know the average American has 97 points that they could add to their credit score, but have no idea how? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? Hey, one member raised their credit score in 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right. Try Scoremaster for free and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings. Hey, I want to thank you all for joining this week. We had wonderful guests in Tony Palmer and Tony Zork talking about wonderful topics about the pandemic. And again, I want to thank scoremaster.com for helping everybody in the world raise their credit score. Look forward to seeing you next week. Stay healthy, stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.